Welcome to the Living Life on Purpose podcast with your host, Michael Mukunda Chandra Cohan, the founder of YourWellnessYogi.com and the Living Life on Purpose community. The Living Life on Purpose podcast is a show dedicated to inspiring people to achieve their goals and live their dreams to the highest potential. Life is short. Learn to live it on purpose. Inside all of us is a powerful spark of the divine, and yet as life's challenges grind and wear us down, many of us forget that inner spark. However, that spark never leaves us, and if we stray too far from it, we will be unhappy in our life. At Your Wellness Yogi and the Living Life on Purpose community, we are dedicated to helping you discover that inner spark in life. We offer a variety of life coaching packages that meet your needs and budget. We have group coaching, monthly mindfulness mastermind calls, and one-to-one coaching. Get started today and take advantage of our two free personal one-to-one coaching conversations by taking the Circle of Life quiz, a free life assessment tool that helps you reveal the big picture of your true dreams and paves the road for real personalized action plan to take control of your life. Visit yourwellnessyogi.com/life. Before we get started, I wanted to ask you a favor, to write us an honest review of our podcast. By writing us a review, you will help raise our profile so more people can find us on iTunes. Visit yourwellnessyogi.com/podcast and click on subscribe to open up in iTunes and write us a review. You can also write us a review on your device as you listen to the show by opening up the podcast app. Thank you and enjoy this week's episode, and I appreciate you listening. We have a very special guest today on the Living Life on Purpose podcast. Our guest is Rima Rabath. Always willing to be vulnerable, what you see is what you get with Rima, who is confidently and unabashedly wears her heart on her sleeves. Her innate ability to relate, engage, and inspire by holding space for anyone entering the teaching and practicing yoga allows her to create an opening for each student to connect with her, themselves, and the class and the community in a very authentic way. On today's podcast, I interview Rima, and we discuss topics such as spiritual bypassing, the practice of asana, and how yoga is a spiritual practice, what is devotion, how to awaken the heart, and how to have an open mind and live life on purpose. Rima, I just wanted to thank you so much for being on this show. For those of you who do know me in my personal life as a yoga teacher, and those of you who do listen to me on this radio show, Rima was my primary yoga teacher for 7 years, along with my mentor, Yogeshwar. And Rima's classes that I took 3-4 days a week in New York City at Jivamukti were the yoga classes that transformed my life and made me the yoga teacher and the life coach that I am today. And without her teachings and without her love and support, I would not be here today doing what I'm doing. So for me, this podcast and having her on the show is really special. And with that note, welcome Rima, and thank you for being on the show. And let's just get started with asking you our question. What is your definition of living life on purpose?
First of all, thank you so much. I will always have visions of you on your magic carpet or your mat, lifting up into handstand with such gusto and enthusiasm and resilience and fearlessness, actually. My definition of living life on purpose, purpose is, to me, to do something on purpose is a little bit like the theme or the definition of nyasa in vinyasa. Nyasa meaning to consciously place or to place with purpose. So when you're placing your hands on your mat or your feet on your mat or your knees on your mat or your body on your mat or on the ground, you're doing that with a quality of awareness, a quality of consciousness. So living life on purpose is first of all, living life with awareness, with consciousness, with mindfulness. Meaning when you're moving through life and we're constantly moving, right? You're doing so with a knowing of what it is that you're doing while you're doing it. And it doesn't mean that you're overanalyzing every single move, but rather you are moving in the world with intention. And the intention here is the aspiration of who you are, or who you want to be, but also a recognition of where you're at in your life at this present moment, and an appreciation of where you're at in your life. So you might have an idea of your potential, or where you want to go, where you want to, what you want to achieve in life. But it's only through appreciation of where you're at in your life, and an acceptance and an fully embracing of who you are, like with your qualities, but also your shadow stuff and your hangups, your you know, the whole of you, I think, is essential in order to live your life on purpose. So purpose is consciousness, awareness, mindfulness, but also I think it also encompasses you know, your own aspiration of how you want to live your life, the kind of person you want to you want to be seen as, but also that person you want to be seen as should also reflect or mirror certain integrity of who you are. Mm-hmm. Does it make any sense?
It makes complete sense that each person is born with a purpose, a dharma, and to be intentional in life, we have to understand who we are and why we're here on this planet, and then to uncover the truth that makes us unique. And I find that's one of the main themes of your yoga classes, which is why for years I went to your yoga classes. What do you find is most common with most of the yoga students that come into your class for the first time or continue to come, and what are they searching for?
Well, just to go back a little bit about the point on dharma, which, you know, which comes from the Sanskrit root, which means to, you probably will pronounce it better than me, but to uphold or to hold. Dharma is, yes, your purpose or your what you're meant to be in life, but also it's to really achieve your dharma. I do think that there's a understanding the reality of where you are at is very important, because, you know, it's just, if you don't really are able, if you are not able to see clearly your reality, then how can you achieve your dharma? Takes me to the next question of yours, which, what do they have in common, or what are they searching for? I think really honesty and transparency and a clarity about the whole of their being. I think, I think I'm quite transparent in my classes. I'm quite authentic. I try not to pretend to be someone I'm not. Mm-hmm. It's about really, I think it's about embracing, you know, all aspects of ourselves. The yoga practice helps us, you know, have clarity about all the aspects of ourselves. So I'm not trying to pretend to be somebody else. And I think I'm quite approachable. So I think in a way, people who are coming to my class or, are here to, you know, more fully accept who they are and be authentic about who they are without, it's about no pretense. I think it's about to live their life without any pretense. But, and I think my teacher Sharon Gannon talks about pretense. As we know, pretense is pretending who you're not, but also when you think about the verb pretense, before the present moment. So it's, I think people who are coming to my class are just want to just be present. This is what's happening. They want to be there for the experience and an experience of themselves as they are in that class, where they're being accepted and they can accept themselves as they are.
Mm-hmm. What are the common struggles that most of the students that you come across face while being in the material world and searching for that yoga practice to be with them at all times?
I think the biggest struggle for people who have a spiritual practice or an asana practice, which is a spiritual practice, is I think we try to compartmentalize our life and our practice. And when really what the teachings of yoga are calling out or inviting us to do is to integrate the two. So mm-hmm. one, you know, it's just, it's not about struggling with, oh, well, this is my yoga practice and this is my life. And when I'm on my mat, I'm trying to be as spiritual and a good person and conscious and aware of my breath. But when I'm in my life, then it's a different thing. And I think, you know, can we work with the whole, all aspects of life, even the downs and the maybe the shadow aspects of our life, the places where we're maybe ashamed of or are not completely accepting of on our mat. And so I think, you know, the struggle, it's not about struggling, and Pema Chodron speaks about that a lot. It's not about it struggling, but it's actually working with all aspects of ourselves. And I think we struggle because we compartmentalize. And once, if you really have a disciplined, regular practice, the teachings will tell you actually stop struggling, work with all of it.
Mm-hmm.
All of it.
I heard an interesting statement the other day. And basically, the teacher said, if you're not in a constant state of flow in your life, then something is wrong and you need to go out and fix it. And that has been resonating with me for the last 5 days, examining my own personal life and how I can make changes. And you, as a teacher of change, how or what is one of the ways that you suggest to your students that they can begin to no longer compartmentalize their life and begin to find that their yoga practice and their life outside of yoga become one?
I think it's about honesty. You know, it's really about honesty. What the yoga practice in general helps us do, like any spiritual tradition, discipline, and or tradition, is really the more you practice, the more you realize that your practice is mirroring back to you all aspects of yourself. And I, you know, where you're afraid, where you've been wounded, you know, from an emotional standpoint, what is triggering you, what is sticking you, and that practice, like on the mat in a safe environment, whether it's on your meditation cushion or, you know, sitting singing kirtan, or whether it's on your yoga mat or anything else, it's showing you that you're being everything is being reflected back to you. And so if you're able to see that on your mat, you're more prepped to do that off the mat or in your life. And so you're able to catch yourself. You know, it's like if you're being triggered by, you know, the classic example, you know, an arm balance on the mat, where are you being triggered on the sidewalk? And if you catch yourself being triggered on the mat, okay, where is this fear coming from? Or why am I so afraid? Or is it because I'm afraid to fall? Or is it because I don't want to just look like an idiot falling? Or am I going to the bathroom when the teacher is calling handstand? And so what are the fears that, okay, so I'm like seeing these fears directly. What is, okay, if this is coming up on the mat, it must be coming up somewhere else in life. And so I think that's really being in the flow. It's being, you know, watching yourself constantly with vigilance, but not in a way that's where you're stopping. You're pausing, but you're not stopping. I don't know if that makes sense in terms of there's a difference between pause and like being stopped in your track completely, where you're completely inactive.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that, you know, when we say flow, one of my teachers in the Buddhist world defined ego as resisting life as it is. And for me, that's one of the greatest definitions of ego.
Mm-hmm.
It's life is about moment-to-moment evolution. And if we're unable to perceive that I mean, life is constantly changing, right? It's, mm-hmm. you know, we try to hold on to things when, you know, life is showing us that it's, you know, it's evolving, it's moving constantly. So flow is that, is being able to recognize that grasping, clinging, trying to hold on to whether it's your identity or something that you've solidified in your life, it's preventing you from, it's actually ego rearing its head or mm-hmm. peeking its head. So just, yeah. So I do believe that the practice is constantly, you know, when you're at least in the, I would say like in the practice of yoga asana, you're constantly moving. Even if it's in an Iyengar class, there is movement. Mm-hmm. Movement in your, like just like watching the refinement that are happening in Uttita Trikonasana that you've been holding for, you know, I don't know, 6-7 minutes. And on your cushion, it's the same thing. It's the movement of the mind. And so that's flow. And just mm-hmm. watching this movement, I think, is what is being in the flow or just not resisting life as it is.
To just be in harmony with whatever life brings you.
While watching your, how you're reacting to this moment-to-moment evolution or life is bringing you.
I think that's one of the hardest things, though, is when you're practicing yoga and you're doing everything in life, you're getting up in the morning, you're meditating, you're being healthy, you're doing your work, and then something bad happens to you, and you keep saying, why do bad things happen to me? I'm trying to be a good person in life, and the person next to me who is not moral seems to have everything they want in life. And we struggle with that comparing and contrasting. And as yoga practitioners, it's hard for us sometimes to try to adhere to those principles. And we get really rigid in our yoga practice because that's what we're told, to not be attached, to be disciplined. And when bad things happen, it's because of your karma. And if you just let go, it will all work out for you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, karma is such a wonderful, vast subject. I mean, you nailed it. I think we're so, it's, I mean, the main teaching is try not to be so obsessed with achieving and do the best you can. Like, it's exactly what you just said. Keep practicing, as Sri K. Patabijo says, and all is coming. But it's not, it's, yeah, you have to do the work. I mean, basically, you have to dust yourself off. You have to, like, purify, which is what the practices are all about. So and see what happens. But also another main teachings in yoga is don't be so obsessed with what others are doing. I mean, just as Sri Brahmananda Saraswati used to say, mind, comma, your own business. Mm-hmm. And I do think that there's a teaching like that in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna is telling Arjuna, just follow your own dharma rather than the dharma of somebody else, isn't it?
Well, it's one of the key principles of the Bhagavad Gita when Arjuna says to Krishna, I don't want to fight on this battlefield. I want to go off into the woods and be a yogi. And Krishna is basically flips it and says, that's not what you're meant to do. You're a Kshatriya, you're a warrior. Your duty is to defend the innocent, to defend the poor, to defend the disenfranchised. These people across from you are evil. They have taken everything from you without morality. Your job is to go fight them, not to go off into the woods. That's somebody else's dharma. And if you don't follow your dharma, then you're going to live a life of suffering.
Amen.
which is the hardest thing I find in life for me personally is to continually try to stay adhered to my dharma. And every once in a while when I'm personally struggling in my life, I keep looking at other people and saying, maybe I should go try that new shiny object and everything will work out for me because I clearly am not doing my dharma because I'm clearly suffering right now.
But as you said earlier, you talked about karma is like old seeds ripening and, you know, all the good work that one is putting with, you know, with great heart and devotion now will those seeds will ripen in the future. I mean, that's also why one of the themes that I had mentioned to you when I was filling out the form for this interview is long-term versus short-term. And we're so mm-hmm. addicted to short-term gratifications. I mean, we see it on Instagram. I mean, I'm not on Facebook, but I'm assuming it's the same system as Instagram. like our nervous system is prone to get exhilarated when we get a lot of likes, I mean, including myself. And that's so short term, that's so numerical. And yoga is really about the long term. It takes sometimes like 12 years. It is said that it takes 12 years to master Mula Bandha and years to be able to like stand on our hands and so on and so forth. So it's about really long term, and the whole seed philosophy or the gardening of our own minds, which is the crux of the concept and the practice of karma, is just it takes a while. You might not see the results or the friction of your actions right away. Mm-hmm. And that's totally okay. So, but there is something to be said, like also being realistic. If you feel that whatever it is you're doing right now is not fulfilling you, or not, you know, you're getting the feedback in some way that it's just like, maybe this is not exactly what you're supposed to be doing. Like I knew when I started teaching yoga, sort of right away, I mean, I was loving it, but I also was getting feedback that I'm on the right track. So watching for signs and signposts and is important, which is part of this whole work on awareness and observation. I mean, you're constantly getting signals as to whether you're on track or not. And I think I've read that the spiritual path is actually narrow. When I say narrow, or when they say narrow, it means that you know when you're knocking on a wall, because the path is narrow in the sense that, like, if you're knocking on a wall, that means you're like veered off track. So you can go back on track. Mm-hmm. And I think that's you know, signals are there. And the other thing about I can't remember exactly what the word you used, but there's also this aspect of we keep talking about renunciation and like the spiritual path being renouncing certain things. Of course, there are certain things that you're gonna have to let go of when you're diving onto a path or a practice. But in the end, what we're renouncing is the pull of samsara. You mentioned shiny object, like realizing that the shiny object, there's nothing wrong with wanting a shiny object, but this constant chasing after shiny things might not really bring about, you know, lasting satisfaction. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just chasing after one shiny object and the next might not be really what is going to fulfill you as a student of life.
I want to know right off the bat, because I've never heard this before. What is spiritual bypassing?
Okay, so the spiritual bypassing is a term that was coined many, many years ago, maybe 30 years ago, mm-hmm. by a man, gentleman called John Wellwood. And I've heard about it more in the sort of Buddhist realms that I've been traveling in and studying in with. And spiritual bypassing really is using a spiritual practice to sidestep your real life human issues and struggles. Like basically using spirituality as a way to avoid dealing with, you know, our buried shadow stuff, our karmic hangups. And mm-hmm. So basically, you know, I'm spiritual. I'm this teacher of yoga, or I'm this, you know, scholar in Sanskrit, and I'm not going to deal with my past. I'm not going to deal with the traumas mm-hmm. that I might have lived through as a young person. I'm not going to even look at what ticks me or triggers me, because, you know, I study the Bhagavad Gita, or I meditate for, you know, X amount of minutes or hours a day, when, you know, in the end, we're all human. Just by nature of being human, there is stuff that is buried inside. And so spiritual bypassing is using spiritual practice as without ever dealing with your own shit.
With your material problems. And I honestly, this is one of my biggest struggles with the spiritual community. when I see people who escape from their material problems, their financial debt, their relationship problems, and they run into ashram life and they go, I'm spiritual now. I don't have to deal with those problems. And those problems don't leave them. They carry into the monastic spiritual life. And then they wreak havoc within the spiritual community because they're unwilling to face their demons. Preaching to the choir, sister.
No, totally. It's like we all have demons. I mean, some demons are more scary than others. But even Milarepa had demons. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's this famous story about him towards the end of his like spiritual achievements. And you probably know the story, but he's out to get some wood for his fire. He comes back into his cave. I mean, this is a man who's been studying for God knows how many years, and the demons are there sitting on his bed, reading his books, eating his food. And it's like, you know, and he's trying to just push them away by sitting almost on a throne and like teaching them something. And then he realizes that these demons, and he has to kind of like embrace these demons and realize that even him, he has demons. And the story goes on when the last of the demons, I guess he like dives into the demons' mouth. I mean, it's a metaphor, but the idea is just to embrace your demons. And so it's look at your stuff. We you know, whatever it is, look at your stuff. So spiritual bypassing is not bypassing your stuff. You realize, I mean, we have a body. Because we have a body, we have karmas. And because we have karmas, we also have, as you said, stuff that we might not want to look at.
Right. Yeah, I found one of the struggles that I have in this my spiritual community is this like mood or mindset that material desires are bad, and the goal of the bhakti yogi is to surrender all material desires and to become a devotee and live a monastic life. And for me, the struggle was that did not work for me. I think there are people that can be monks and they can be monastic, and it's beautiful, and I admire them, and I love their association. But the pressure that is the goal of yoga, I find causes more harm for most people and doesn't provide enough solace, where we become so dogmatic in that renunciation of life. And when we have material desires, it's bad, and we shouldn't have them.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. I mean, I don't think my dharma is to become a nun. And I do, I mean, material. I mean, we have a body. I keep coming back to that. I mean, and I'm an asana teacher. Not mm-hmm. a meditation teacher. I'm not a kirtanwala. I'm an asana teacher. And so first and foremost, we work with our body. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we have a body means that it's material, okay, flesh, bone, you know, muscles. And so we're going to have material desires. I think the goal of yoga is to not to renounce material desires, is to renounce avidya, which is misperception, mm-hmm. Thinking we're just the body, but mm-hmm. also thinking that the shiny objects or material desires are going to fulfill our highest aspirations. But not having material desire, I think, does a disservice to being a yogi in the world. I mean, we are in this world. I live in Manhattan and I love living in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. I have an apartment in the East Village and I love having an apartment in the East Village. And I having material desire is a very part of being human, and embracing our humanity, I think, is the goal of yoga. And by embracing or accepting our humanity or humanness, we're able to discover our enlightened potential, which is being fully awake and completely, utterly present to all there is, but also understanding and recognizing that the senses can trap us. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's not about turning away from the material world completely, but recognizing that it could be a trap if it's the only thing you're pursuing. Like if it's your, yes.
Yes, I am on the same page with you. What I like to tell people when they ask me is, if you are not meant to live a monastic life, that does not mean you're not a yogi. But it doesn't mean as a yogi that you run around and not follow the principles of yoga, whether you're a Buddhist or a Hindu or a Vaishnav or a Christian. You take the tradition that you are a part of, your religious beliefs, your faith, and you apply it to your yoga practice and then try your best to adhere to those standards without causing harm to others and to yourself. And so if you are a yogi, you don't go out and take from everybody and you don't manipulate people for material satisfaction, but you appreciate the things that you have in life and understand that your desires are not bad if they're fulfilled in a healthy way that's not consuming, to find that balance between spiritual life and material life.
I mean, yeah, and then integrate the two.
Integrate the two, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And yoga is really, I mean, and that's the main theme, I think, about in the Bhagavad Gita. It's yoga is, it's the path of action. Mm-hmm. And so inquiry or inquisitiveness about, you know, how you're acting, why you're acting, and are your actions resulting in the fruits, if I may, or the fruition of your action is giving you the results that are making your life feeling whole and integrated and full.
Mm-hmm. So after we begin to understand that we're just doing spiritual bypassing, and there comes to a point in our yoga practice that happened to me where I could just no longer try to live up to the standard of being a bhakti yogi in the pressures of New York City, that I personally had to leave New York City so I can get some breathing room to be myself. What do we do when we can just no longer just pretend to be
something? Hold on, you're totally breaking up. Hold on.
Can you hear me better?
Hold on, you totally broke up.
Can you hear me now?
So how this? Yeah, much better, yeah.
So what
do you do when you can no longer?
You can no longer pretend to be something you're not, that you're holding on to this ideal form of spirituality as a yoga practitioner, which typically happens to people in our field, that where we make a living as a preacher or a person who's practicing a certain standard of yoga, and we can no longer pretend to be what we're not. And we have to face our demons. And what do we do when we get to that point where we can no longer pretend to be what we're not as yoga teachers and yoga practitioners?
You basically, I mean, it's a good question. I come back to the word transparency.
Mm-hmm.
Which also in down the line, transparency is what leads to, you know, confidence. You know, mm-hmm. if you're transparent with yourself, if you're transparent with confidence about who you are, and so you're authentic in the way you're presenting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you're a teacher, you don't want to like show up to your class or to lecture or in front of your students and have them, you know, and disclose, you know, it's not about you really.
Right.
But I do think is like in the way you present yourself, you're not hiding, you're working on yourself through your own personal practice. And, mm-hmm. and knowing that eventually if you work with sincerity without giving up on yourself, because you might fall off track often. I think that's you know, we're not being asked to be, I mean, you know, someone other than who we are. I mean, we're human.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not being asked to be, when I say superhuman is, you know, it's like in the cities, like in chapter three of the Yoga Sutra, it's not about showing off. I mean, it's not about, you know, people are not looking for teachers who can levitate and teacher who could, you know, walk through walls. And actually people, I think, are craving teachers who are human, who are actually working with their own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so the moment you realize that you can't anymore fraud yourself anymore, and you have stuff to work with, you know, I think that's the teachers people are looking up to.
Well, that's why I had to leave New York City personally, because I just couldn't breathe anymore being a practitioner of yoga with the amount of intensity that I felt I was just trying to live up to this example of who I wasn't. And I have material desires. I want a decent house. I want to drive a nice car. I want to own a yoga studio. I want to go on nice vacations. And I felt like I could not live up to that standard of being the renunciant and being the yogi that's ultra spiritual. And I personally had to leave the world.
But that's in certain circles only, because I'm a yoga teacher. I'm a Jivamukti yoga teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel that pressure of, you know, leaving the world and wearing white all day long and having a bindi on my forehead. And, you know, it's more about the practical things, you know, mm-hmm. being a plant-based, having a plant-based diet, trying to cause the least amount of harm in my thoughts, actions, and words, trying to live a life that is inspiring not only to others but to myself. And I mean, that's what I feel is so great about New York, or at least in the circles I move in, I move around in, and work and relate to. No one is asking me or to be someone I'm not.
Agreed, 100%. It was my own hang-ups. That's
why. I see. Yeah, yeah. No, and it's, yeah.
It was my own, like, spiritual bypassing, where I had this, I just had to turn around and go, I have to go face these demons I'm ignoring. I have to go deal with my financial problems. I have to go deal with my relationship woes from my ex-wife. I have to go deal with those emotional issues and try to figure out who I really am from my authentic standpoint.
And that's so brave, actually, and courageous, because, you know, New York City is a hard, I mean, even though sometimes we want to leave it, I think it's a hard city to leave.
And it's a very hard city, because there's such great, beautiful yoga teachers like yourself, and there's great practitioners, and there's great spiritual devotional awakening in New York City at every moment, plus the great restaurants. So there are times when I do miss New York City. I will agree with that. Yeah. It has been 45 minutes, Rima. I would like to talk about the physical practice of yoga and how it is a spiritual practice.
Okay, so my first thought about that is something that Sharon Gannon, the co-founder of Jivamukti Yoga, often said, is to be spiritual means to breathe. And, you know, so the moment you breathe, like if you're breathing, that means you're spiritual, which mm-hmm. I always loved. I thought it was so simple and so beautiful and so poignant. And when you think about the yoga practice, one of the main aspects of the asana practice, I would say, is becoming aware of your breath, and to go a little bit deeper into the technical aspect of breathing in the practice of yoga asana is ujjayi breathing, which is a breath that is audible, and I like to say generous, and it's controlling the volume of air and the duration of the inhalation and the exhalation. So just this awareness of breath, which is source of life, gives you an appreciation of how of the spiritual being you are. I think that's one first and foremost. Then the asana practice, I think, is a practice of, you know, of embodied presence, like being in your body and working out the kinks in your body. If you practice on a regular basis, whether it's every day or a few times a week, you will realize that your body is changing. There are days where your practice is phenomenal. You're flying on your magic carpet, and other days where it sucks. It's painful. You don't feel like getting on your mat. It's hard. It's intense. You're bored. You're, you know, whatever that is. And I think all that, just coming back to this day after day after day, is in a way encouraging you, compelling you, inviting you to work with, you know, your mind, because it's really your mind which is connected to your body. And you're working with mind, I think, is a spiritual practice in and of itself, because, you know, your mind is, whether you know it or not, is sort of ruling your life. Mm-hmm. And so once you get a grip of the inner workings of your mind on your mat, you're able to navigate your life a little bit better, or the ups and downs of life a little bit better, and gearing your life in a direction that is kinder, gentler, more inclusive, more appreciative of life itself, which is what I think spirit is. You know, once you are able to contemplate on life itself, like on your own life, and how you're relating to your own mind, but also which helps you to get a knack as to how you're relating to others, you can guide spirit, if that makes sense.
It does. And honestly, I think that's where we needed to end. That was perfect. So I have all your information. So we'll put your website in our show notes. And any other questions you have for us?
No. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really delighted.
Thank you for listening to the Living Life on Purpose podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please subscribe to our show in iTunes and write us a review. By writing us a review, you will help raise our profile so more people can find us on iTunes. Links to our sponsors and other tools can be found in our show notes, along with other useful information. For more information on our yoga and coaching classes, please visit our website at yourwellnessyogi.com, and please sign up for our newsletter. Life is short. Learn to live it on purpose.